The Blue Jays get their first sweep of the season, and don't look now, but we're in first place. Let's get to it. Good evening, everybody. It is April the 2nd, and welcome to episode 242 of Buds and Blue Jays. It's your place for all things related to the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm Jesse Burrell, joined as always by Jesse Tricio, and today on the show, we're going to talk all things Toronto Blue Jays, including Bowden France's first start of the season, George Springer still having some juice left in this back, and we're going to marvel at Andrés Giménez's power hitter. But first, because the Blue Jays did just play the Washington Nationals, and to be honest, we don't see a lot of them. We don't know enough about this team. We brought in a special guest to talk all things Washington Nationals as well on this show. That is Doug Irwin. Doug, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. Excited to hop on and talk about a series that was great for two-thirds of the people on the screen.
That's right. Doug, I hate to do this to you, to have you on to be a guest on our show just to talk about how our baseball team destroyed your baseball team for the next 35 minutes here. But that is just how it's got to be today, unfortunately. But tell us a little bit about yourself, how you became a Nats fan, your fandom game, or a crazy baseball story, whatever you want to take.
Sure. I am a born and raised in South Carolina guy. Grew up in the heart of Atlanta Braves country. I'm a 90s kid, so I lived through the Braves dynasty in the 90s and enjoyed baseball, but was not necessarily my favorite sport. And then graduated college in 2010 and moved up to Washington, just looking for a job, and always kind of knew at that point I'd really gotten back into baseball, high school, college, and had just kind of fallen in love with watching the game, listening to the game on the radio, but didn't really have a team. We have a Red Sox affiliate in my town in South Carolina that has produced a ton of major league players. Always kind of pulled for the Red Sox, pulled for the Braves, but knew if I moved to a city with a major league team that had cheap tickets, I'd fall in love. And sure enough, I did. fell in love with DC sports. Only lived up in DC for 2 years, but probably went to 25% of Nats home games while I was there. It was a cheap subway ride and a $5 ticket most days. So fell in love with the Nats and got to see their 2011 season, where you really got to see building to the kind of 2010s. Competitive Nats teams of the 2010s. They went 80-81 that year. I'll never forget that. We would have gone 500 if it hadn't been rained out.
Right.
But, got to see Strasburg in his prime. Got to see Bryce Harper's debut. I remember being at his home debut, electric night, even though I think it was like a Tuesday and it wasn't sold out. But got to follow the team. Obviously World Series in 2019 and just kind of those 2 years, man. I'm a Nats guy for life, through good and bad, and there's been a lot of bad lately since that World Series title.
Trust me, we know what it's like to go through the ups and the downs of baseball, and the Blue Jays have had a lot more down than we have had up, so we're right there with you. Anyways, glad to have you on the show. Jesse, I'll turn things to you. Let's talk a little bit about this series of the Toronto Blue Jays, and before you give me your players of the series, I just got to give you a standings update. And no, it is not too early in the season to be looking at playoff odds and checking out the standings, but after the sweep of the Washington Nationals, 5-2 in game one, 5-3 in game two, and 4-2 in game two, the Blue Jays have a 5-2 record. We are in first place of the AL East, baby. Just half a game up on those Tampa Bay Rays. And our playoff odds this early in the season have jumped to 46.2%. So, boy, we are feeling good. Coming off the Golden Grapefruit, best record in the Grapefruit League, to now starting the season with 5 wins in our first 7. We are feeling very good. But, Jesse, without further ado, why don't you give me your player of the series for the Toronto Blue Jays?
First thing I gotta say is how sleep it is. Mm-hmm. But my player of this series would definitely have to be my guy, Bowden Francis. Started the series off right. Only 6 innings of no-hit ball. Gave up those 2 homers, but just continue his dominance of what he had in the second half of last season. Just, we had some concerns coming into spring, but he was probably just working on stuff like just how good he was and dominant in that first outing of the season, and really set the tone for what was to come.
Yeah, rested the bullpen too, which was very key because then we got to use a bunch of our bullpen in game two and three of the series. We don't get a sweep in this series if it's not for the performance that Bowden Francis delivered. We'll dive into a little bit more about his performance later in the episode. But Doug, you got a player of the series, and I said before the show I thought it would be CJ Abrams because he hit two of the, what, three home runs Washington hit, but you had a different name for me. Hit me with what you think your player of the series was.
Yeah, well, I'm a little biased here because this man tortured me in fantasy baseball for 2 years, and he's the player of the series because he's pissed me off the last three games.
Love it.
It's Andrés Giménez. You know, that trade really baffled me. You know, I was surprised the Blue Jays would take it on given how backloaded his contract was. I kind of didn't understand the deal at first, and then when I learned more about his contract, I thought, boy, this is risky for the Blue Jays, you know, taking on him. And again, I feel like he certainly on the batting average side hasn't lived up to what I thought he was, which is, you know, a little bit of pop, a lot of steals, and, you know, a second baseman who you hope will hit 275, 280 maybe. And I think the last 2 years he's hovered around 250, both of which I owned him in fantasy. But just seeing him in the middle of the Jays order, you know, getting hits. I think he had a homer and a stolen base in the first game of the series. And, man, just looks confident and comfortable. And I think he's my player of the series because, yeah, maybe he didn't have the stats that Springer or Abrams had throughout the series. But I feel like he showed some things that if you get that Andrés Giménez for the whole year, you guys are in great shape, you know, at second base. So part of it was frustration, but I think hopefully a really good sign of things come for you guys from what he showed this series.
Yeah. Remember at that point when we made the Andrés Giménez trade, the Blue Jays were missing on every free agent. So when we made the trade for Giménez, we're like, holy crap, we finally found somebody to take our money, even though he kind of was forced to because we traded for him. Fun Andrés Giménez facts before we dive a little deeper into that. Andrés Giménez leads the Blue Jays with his three home runs through seven games in the season. That's more home runs before today than the LA Angels, the Colorado Rockies, or Houston Astros had as a team coming into today for known cleanup hitter Andrés Giménez. Absolutely great stuff. I might write an article here soon discussing about the changes he's made at the plate, but it's been really fascinating. He's reworked his whole swing, and it's led to immediate success for Andrés Giménez. My player of the series, and I can't believe I'm doing this, is old man George Springer. Holy crap. Jesse, you and I spent all winter bash-talking George Springer. I think one of my predictions was he wasn't even going to make it through May on the roster. And holy crap, he has been absolutely phenomenal. He's hitting baseballs harder than he has since like he was in Houston. He's turning on like 97-mile-per-hour fastballs again. I didn't think in my wildest dreams that George Springer still had this in him. I don't know if it's Dave Popkins and the hitting coach working his magic or what is happening here, or George Springer sold his soul to the baseball devil, but six multi-hit games, I think, to start this year. Maybe it's five, and he hit his first home run in game three here today. Absolutely wild from George Springer. Thumbs up from me, my man.
Two thumbs right here.
Perfect. All right. We love to see that. Absolutely. Let's dive into a little bit more of the Blue Jays specific things. And I guess we got to start pitching, right? But the Blue Jays held the Nationals, or I don't know if it's the Nationals, maybe just didn't hit that well, but it's probably a bit of column A and a bit of column B. Jesse, you mentioned Bowden Francis and his start. He took that no hitter into the eighth. He had eight ground ball outs. I thought he was battling his command a little bit early, and I think he kind of just ran out of gas a little bit, which led to the two home runs that he went. But a great outing from Bowden Francis. Jesse, did you want to elaborate on his performance anymore?
Well, firstly, I will say you drinks it because right when you texted, he gave up the the home run, so that's on you. But
yes,
no, it was a great start. Like, it definitely saved our bullpen for this series, especially him going deep and knowing the uncertainty about today's game with who's going to start and whatnot. Like, he just set the tone, and like, he really, like I said, he trusted shit and let it eat. So like, he just literally set the tone and they use that almost Scherzer-esque bulldog mentality.
And sometimes that is what you got to do. I want to touch a little bit on Jose Berríos here, who had a nice bounce back after his disastrous start on opening day. Got eight strikeouts, which was encouraging. And a lot of the slurves where he was getting swings and missing were below the zone. The command was a lot better from Jose Berríos. 5 2/3, four hits, two earned runs, three walks, and eight strikeouts for Jose Berríos. And Doug, I just want to be honest with me. Did you have any idea who Easton Lucas was before he made the start here today?
Not a chance. Not a chance. But he sounds like a guy who would start for the Nats sometime in August. You know, sure. Like it's just I respect that type of player. You're just like, sure, why not? Let's throw this dude out.
I mean, you seem like a hockey guy. You're wearing a Capitals sweater right now. Doesn't Easton Lucas sound like the most typical hockey name I think I've ever heard in a long time? More
yeah, came, the, came up through the came up through the juniors. He's, you know, fourth right. line for the Kings right now. Sure. Might get in a fight.
Sure. But today he's pitching 5 shutout innings against the Washington Nationals. So good for him. And look, 5 innings, 1 hit, no one runs, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts for Easton Lucas. We kind of spent last episode talking about who gets this Max Scherzer spot in the rotation once Scherzer hit the IL. The Jays decided they liked seeing Yariel Rodriguez in that late inning spot. So Easton Lucas, with a career 8.59 ERA, comes on up, and he did to the Washington Nationals what I am so used to these random Tampa Bay Rays middling pitchers we've never heard of come in and shut us down for 5 innings. And Doug, I know your pain and what it feels like to see this guy, this soft tosser we've never heard of, come up and just shut you down your lineup. So our apologies for Easton Lucas.
Yeah, I get, you got to hand it to him. I mean, again, you know, he wasn't missing a ton of bats, but he was effective, you know, inducing weak contact. It's a lost art. But when you do it well, man, it is suffocating.
Yeah. And it's puts your team in a great spot and a good position to win. Jesse, he's 100% earned another chance to start, right?
Oh yeah. And I'll use a good old Schneider quote. I'll tip my cap to that performance by Easton Lucas.
Did John Schneider actually say that? Did he tip his cap to his own player this time?
I don't know if he did, but I'm surprised he didn't say it. If he did.
For Doug, you might not know, John Schneider, every time a pitcher shuts us down, he's always like, "Oh, tip your cap. It's become a meme. It's ridiculous in Blue Jay circles here. All right, Jesse, do you want to talk bullpen or do you want to go to the offensive side of the ball here for the next impact players?
Let's go for once. I'm actually pleased about the bullpen.
All right, go on. Tell me about it.
Oh, definitely. Like Jeff Hoffman, what can I say? That is what an elite closer is. Like, Game 2, it was 8 pitches, shut down today. Tyler Hyman helped him out today with the throwing out Young at second to end it. But, like, Jimmy doing what he's got to do are now high leverage. Yariel Rodriguez doing what he had to do. Like, our bullpen does not look like the blowpen I called it all year last year. It's nice to see, and especially now, even Mason Fluhart making his debut, looking solid. Like all these pieces were clicking, and it felt so right for once, and not painful like it did last year.
If you take out the opening day slacking of the Baltimore Orioles gave to the Toronto Blue Jays, the Blue Jays bullpen as a whole has thrown 18 and a third innings pitch. We have a 3.93 ERA. We've accumulated half a WAR already just in that short time. And you'll remember last season as a full season, the Blue Jays bullpen produced negative WAR. So already in 7 games into the season, we've produced half a win out of our bullpen. And a lot of that has got to be the back end guys of Jeff Hoffman and Jimmy Garcia. And Doug, I know you've seen a lot of Jeff Hoffman over these last few years, especially with his time with the Philadelphia Phillies, but you got to put some value into having that guy at the back end of the pen, you know, can just come in and seal the door. It's been great for us. It's got to be heartbreaking for you as a fan to come in and watch that guy come into the pen.
I think it's doubly challenging as I watch. I looked up earlier today because I swear that the first reliever in for us in each of our first 6 games has given up a run in his first inning. Not true. It only happened once this series, but it feels that way. So, you know, as you watch our starters give way to these guys, and that's, I think we've already seen these 3 games and the games against the Phillies, this is going to be a pain point for the Nats all year. So for you guys to be able to have that confidence in any inning, right? Even if it's your 7th inning guy, just to have one of those true firemen that can come, you know, do that. It's whether your team's headed the World Series or is just trying to hover around 500, even having one of those guys just keeps the heartburn at bay. And, you know, Hoffman did great. And even Garcia stepping in when Hoffman wasn't available, the first game, that's got to give you guys a lot of confidence moving forward.
we can send you Jacob Barnes back, who you had on your team last year, if you would like.
I don't miss him. Like that. Yeah, he was a guy who came up. I'm pretty sure came up through Greenville, South Carolina, and you know was great at the single A level. But what does that mean when you've bounced from the Marlins to the Nats to the Jays, amongst others?
Spent some time in the Angels team as well, but I mean a 35-year-old journeyman who hasn't really done a lot, and he has not looked good at his brief time. Jacob Barnes, unrelated to where I was going to get, was warming up for like three straight innings in the bullpen, and we didn't use him. He pitched like a complete game in the bullpen today, which was wild. Thank God there was an off day for our Blue Jays tomorrow. Well, we're on the note of the bullpen, Jesse. Your guy, Mason Fluharty, got into a game in game one of this series, looked good in his inning. Came through, was throwing, slinging those sliders all over the place from the left side, got a strikeout, gave up a hit, but I thought he looked good. Jesse, give me your thoughts on Mason Fluharty in his first big league appearance.
Oh, definitely. Like, from watching him with the Bisons and coming out through the system, like, I knew what he was going to do, and seeing him do it in the big league level is definitely pleasing to me, just because what he did is why I was saying he needed to be up over Dick Lovely and even Jacob Barnes. Like, why he should have made the team in the spring. I don't understand, still don't understand why they didn't do it right away, but I'm so glad he's up. And I wanted him and former Jay Hanging Danner up in our bullpen even last year.
Yep.
But like now he's finally got his chance, and I think he's not going to leave anytime soon.
His next big step will come next series as we're facing Juan Soto and the New York Mets. So you know Mason Fluharty is going to get in there and try to get Juan Soto out. And if he can do that, he might be in this big league bullpen for the rest of the series. Jesse, last episode, we touched on Yariel Rodriguez coming into play the eighth. In game one of the series, he came in the seventh, did give up a couple hits. They only faced the three batters, got one out, and then pulled. How do you feel? Are you more in the camp now of Yariel Rodriguez trying to get him into that long man role? Or do you still think it's the best decision for the Blue Jays to stretch him out a little bit?
Oh, he's a bullpen. I don't want him in the rotation. I feel like he will, like, just his intenseness and the way he is just built for the bullpen. Like, I don't want him to be a Nate Pearson 2.0. I want him in the bullpen. Stick him there. And be that setup man or even the seventh inning man when like Chad Green is not available or Swanson is not available.
Because you want that stuff to play up. And the guy did it in Japan, right? Yariel Rodriguez is one of those most interesting players on this roster. And if he can settle into that relief role, even if you have a middle reliever for 5-6 years, that's probably making more money than you want a middle reliever to make. If he's good and effective, it doesn't matter. And that's what we want to see from Yariel Rodriguez. All right, Doug, I'm going to turn things back over to you here. And simple question. Do you like bunting?
I love bunting, and DH has ruined it. And this is the most old man yelling at a cloud baseball take. But situational bunting, man, it's such a lost art.
Okay, well, then you must have loved what happened in game one of this series. Will Wagner, bunting machine. I did not even know he had that in his bag. Laid down two very nice bunts. Ernie Clement laid down another nice bunt as well, which really led to the Blue Jays rally and getting some runs late into game one here. I'm not a fan of bunts, Jesse, as I know you know. I know you like to see the buntings. But when they're executed, they put pressure on the defense. I don't remember who the pitcher was, Doug, but he dropped one of the bunts that allowed a run to get on there onto that base. It was very good stuff. And Buck Martinez in the broadcast booth, let me tell you, he was loving it when the Blue Jays were laying all these bunts down. And it's kind of nice where the Blue Jays as a team only have four home runs that they have been able to play some small ball, generate some runs across. I will admit, when it works, it is a thing of beauty.
You know, go ahead, Jesse.
I was going to say, it's definitely nice to see, and especially I feel bad for your Nats, where I think you need to still do some PFP to make sure you know how to handle those, but that's coming from me. But I feel bad for that pitcher. I guess there wasn't enough time in spring.
This is why it's a lost art, and like where teams fail to capitalize on it is like, you might not do it in game seven of the World Series, but bunt against bad teams, bunt against teams with young infields, bunt against teams that their offense has question marks. And if you can scrape a couple runs, you know that you could win a game 4-2, 3-1 or something. So I don't know why more teams don't employ that strategy against, sorry, I know I'm a Nats fan, you know, bad teams. So it was refreshing to see. And, I work in soccer, and one of the things I always hear a coach say is ask questions of the defense, right? Put them in situations, ask questions of them. And if you got young infielders, ask questions of them. Bunning asks questions, and certainly of the pitchers.
I like that. So maybe get a little more runners in motion or something, right? Cause a little bit of havoc, do some wild things. It makes a lot of sense when you phrase it that way. Maybe we'll look for that a little more, Jesse, from this Blue Jays team going forward. A lot of runs from the Blue Jays came from late in the order. Anthony Santander he had two hits today, mind you, but other than that, hasn't really done a lot. Vlad still has yet to get a home run. He has done some really good and then some really frustrating things at the plate. But a large percentage of the Blue Jays runs have come late in the order. So Jesse, pick your guy at the bottom of the order. Miles Straw with three hits today. Tyler Heineman had another multi-hit game. Will Wagner, like I said, had a good series, especially with the bunts. Alan Roden got his first base hit of the series. Jesse, tell me about the guys at the bottom of the order. Who did you like coming out of there today?
Oh, I was definitely impressed by Miles Straw, coming in 3-for-3, two doubles, causing havoc on the base paths today, causing an error with his speed when Vladdy was up. Just to play, and even with this defense too, knowing what he had, I feel like the only person in the bottom order that really disappointed me this whole series was Schneider today, and I right. feel like his time is soon up once Marshall comes back, but then again, we'll be super left-handed heavy, so maybe not, but I feel like the only one in the bottom lineup this series that I disappointed was Schneider.
I'm glad you brought that up, Jesse, because there was a decision that John Schneider made in game two of this series. I don't remember the exact situation, but there were runners in scoring position and Alan Roden was up, and the Nationals brought in a left-handed reliever here, and the Blue Jays decided to go to the platoon advantage to bring in Davis Schneider to come in and take Alan Roden out of the game. It was a situation where the Blue Jays really needed to not have a strikeout, and Alan Roden, who, albeit rookie, who has got four games in the big leagues, is a much more contact-oriented player than Davis Schneider. And no surprise, Davis Schneider struck out in that thing. I think John Schneider kind of overplayed his hand a little bit there just for strictly getting the platoon advantage. But then I also think, Jesse, if Davis Schneider can't come in to produce and hit that tough lefty that's coming in for the other team, then he really doesn't have a spot on this roster if he can't even do that, because the defense is getting better but still not great, and the base running isn't there. And if he doesn't have it, then I think I'm with you. When Varsho does come back, it might be Davis Schneider sending down to the minor leagues.
Oh, definitely. I don't know, already jumped over him in depth chart and reliability, and there's still a lot, and there's certain players down in Buffalo that I still would rather have than Davis Schneider.
Right, and combined with his struggles he had last year and whatnot, it doesn't look so good. All right, Doug, we've talked a little bit, and I do want to dive into a little bit about Andrés Giménez and George Springer, but we'll do that in a second. I want to give you some floor. You're on here too. Talk to me about the Nationals. What did you like? Give me a bright spot from your team here in this series.
It's got to be CJ Abrams, right? Right. A couple big homers, not just homers, but homers in good situations to keep us in games, draw us back level. A couple great defensive plays. He's not without his errors, and I think he made one or two of those this series. But man, is he a gamer! So just to see the effort he's bringing to the table, and as strange as it sounds, to set an example for the young guys, right? He's a young guy, but we got a couple rookies or guys that are near rookies. So it's fun to see the energy he brings. Nothing super sexy, but Nate Lowe, looking like he's going to do some things. I've got a friend who's a Rangers fan, and when we made the trade, I was like, thanks. He's a first baseman who doesn't hit for a ton of power, but he's already got a couple homers this year, and just a solid contributor. That's about where things stop. There's not a lot on the pitching side. I can tell you guys felt good from this series. Cabert Ruiz got a couple hits. When I did a Nats preview for the Coach of Suns podcast, I was talking about he's kind of my key for the Nats this year, which sounds weird. But he had such a step back last year from what he was in 2023, and he's on year, I think, 3 or 4 of an 8-year deal. So, we're counting on him to be the catcher of the future. So he's taken some strides this series in the first 6 games back. So there are some bright spots, but there are some tough parts of the series that we can get into too. both on the pitching and the offensive side, that you know, we're sitting 1-5 through six games, and nobody expected us to win 100 games this season, but we got some big questions already.
Yeah, he was hitting, what, third for you guys in the lineup today, which is pretty remarkable. I wouldn't think that would be the case.
Started the season in eighth, I think.
Yeah, and so that's good. He's been at least getting the vote of confidence from your manager, so that's got to be encouraging. How is the Paul DeJong experience going for the Nationals fan? Because Blue Jays fans will remember him when Bo Bichette got hurt. We made a trade for him at the deadline, and he proceeded to go 3-for-30 before letting him go. So what's it like rooting for Paul DeJong on a regular basis?
Oh, it's terrible. He is that like St. Louis Cardinal mold of like he and Matt Carpenter and like Skip Schumacher and all these guys are just these
Aledmys Diaz.
Yeah, they're these light hitting infielders that all are just different forms of the same human, right? Like David Freese was this guy. I know he was, you know, more outfield, but like they're just thorns in your side. But when we signed him, I was so deflated, but we don't have a better answer at third base. And that's the tough part. We got Caden Wallace in the minors, who was with us this spring that we got in a trade with the Royals last year. We got Brady House, who's a good prospect, but is not quite ready yet. So, you know, we don't have a major league ready option. And I think in a perfect world, he hits 240 for us until July when we can call one of these guys up. But it's not somebody I enjoy rooting for. We know his ceiling. You guys obviously have seen the bad side of him. So it wasn't fun through the first six games, and it's not going to be fun for the next 100 or however many he sticks around. I'm afraid he's going to end up sticking around the whole season.
Knowing that, he probably will. He'll have like a stretch where he'll hit you like four home runs in the span of, you know, 10 days, and then he'll just keep finding his way in the lineup because that's what Paul DeJong will do. We'll get back to some more national stuff in a minute here, but Jesse, we got to talk some more Toronto Blue Jays stuff here. Let's do a heat check here on Andrés Giménez and George Springer, who, by the way, those two players along with Tyler Heineman are the only Blue Jays who have hit home runs so far this season. How back, I guess, on a scale of 1 to 10, do you think George Springer is, with 10 being like he's mid prime Houston George Springer World Series MVP type guy, or I guess 0 being like he shouldn't even last be in Buffalo, he's not even good to hold, or like last year? Yeah, so scale of 1 to 10, how back is George Springer?
I'll give him a 4.5 right now.
Okay, so you're not buying it completely yet, eh?
Well, it's only 7 games, and I want his, if he can get out of April and hit like this and like into the warmer months, then I'll start probably getting all the way up there. I don't think he'll hit the 10 like MVP, World Series MVP George Springer for why we signed him for this much, but maybe a 2022 first half 2021 would be nice.
Okay, I think I'm with you there. He is rocking a 667 BABIP this year, which is absolutely unheard of. But if you just want to look at the simple stats, George Springer has a 444 average. He's not going to hit 444. I am not saying that. But right now, that is fourth best in all of baseball in terms of batting average. His on-base percentage is seventh in baseball right now. George Springer has been absolutely phenomenal so far to begin this season. The strikeout rate still a little high, though, approaching 30%. I do want to say, though, in today's game, Mackenzie Gore did strike out George Springer on a changeup. Very good changeup from Mackenzie Gore. I like Mackenzie Gore, but that's beside the point here. And then George Springer made the adjustment on the next at-bat, took that same changeup, and hit it out for a home run. That is some good veteran at-bat there. I'm going to go a little higher, Jesse. I'm going to say 5.5, but I want you to remember, too, last season, when George Springer was downright dreadful, he did hit 2 home runs in the opening series against Tampa Bay. So let's not forget that as we continue to watch George Springer. And then Andrés Giménez, Jesse, and I know one of your bold predictions was that he was going to go 20 home runs, 30 stolen bases. He's been running wild. As Doug said early in this episode, he had the home run and the stolen base in game one. I think he even got caught stealing, which I'm pretty sure he was still safe at even after replay review. Yeah, Doug agrees here. So he's been running wild, Jesse. Your 2030 bold prediction seems like it might be right on the nose here with some changes he's made at the plate. So on a scale of 1, how about this question, Jesse? Out of all the hitters in the Blue Jays lineup, Andrés Giménez is the blank best hitter.
Cleanup hitter. I would call him the best cleanup hitter, but right now the best small ball hitter, even though he leads our team in home runs, like he is going to be the best hit, like small ball hit and run, like a little small things that Doug was saying, like he's the best player to do that right now on the base.
So, hypothetical situation, then you're down by one, game seven of the World Series, two out. How many Blue Jays hitters would you want in that box before you get to Andrés Giménez? Like two. Probably Vlad, right? Probably Bo, and then is Giménez three?
Yeah. I would put him right behind those two.
Okay, and I don't think you're wrong. For those of you watching, let us know in the chat where you would do that with Andrés Giménez. We do got to touch on a little bit of some off-the-field stuff that happened here. As we know, Easton Lucas made the start today because longtime Washington National Max Scherzer went to the IL. He did take a cortisone shot in his thumb to try to get that issue taken care of here. Now, he went and visited a doctor in the States who said that he was going to, Max Scherzer was going to come back and talk about what his next step was with the Blue Jays coaches. To me, that doesn't sound like it's great news, because if you came back from that visit with the surgeon or whatnot, and he said everything was okay, then you wouldn't be having to have a further conversation with the coaching staff and the medical staff. So to me, it makes me seem like maybe Max Scherzer might be out for a little bit longer than just the 15-day IL, which really sucks because Doug, you mentioned earlier, is one of your favorite pitchers, favorite players you've ever seen pitch, and for good reason. So that sucks on Max Scherzer. Do you guys have a thought on how long it's going to take without him on this team?
I want to say probably beginning of May, of that, in the sense because of having to ramp up and his age. And
right.
Seeing how his hand reacts to the cortisone shot that he got, or his thumb with the cortisone shot. Maybe the end of the month, but again, I'd rather have him when we're going like in that stretch run than when it's early in the season.
Makes sense.
I think they got to save him from himself a bit, because part of the reason I love him so much is what a bulldog of a competitor. Man, he is just so much fun to watch when he's on. But he's had this injury for, you know, better part of the last year and a half or two, really since he was with the Mets. And he said that, you know, and I'm trying to understand the mechanics of this, that the thumb affects every part of your throwing motion. So when he's had lat soreness, oblique soreness, all that, he says it's shoulder soreness, it's all related to the thumb. So, you know, for you guys' sake, for Max's sake, if it's going to be 8 weeks, let it be 8 weeks, right? Let's get it right and get him back. You know, I hope this is not his last year, but man, the injuries are piling up, and I want him to have a good farewell tour. And I want you guys and all of, you know, Jays Nation to be able to enjoy him when he's on, because it is just so much fun to see him snarling. I want to see him yell at John Snyder to get back in the dugout and leave me out here. But, you know, it was tough to watch last year because he never got into a rhythm for more than a start or two. So, you know, I hope that you guys have enough depth to let him heal on the timeline he needs so that you can get the real Max Scherzer back.
We don't. But if Easton Lucas can keep pitching like he did today, then maybe we'll be able to buy our own. Jesse, did you see in the game today, Ernie Clement was sliding into plate. He was called out. But you saw Max Scherzer on the bench. He was getting rowdy in there. And Jay's Talk makes a good point here on YouTube. Wasn't ideal seeing him slam that thumb onto the rail during that slide review. Did you have thoughts watching Max Scherzer do this and maybe injure his thumb more? Or did you just love that he was getting fired up and staying in with the game?
Oh, I love how involved he is. Even later in the game, he was like right beside Hugh Walker Schneider talking about like possible pitching moves and all that. And when I saw him slamming his thumb, I was hoping it was his non-pitching hand. I was like, just be your non-throwing hand. Whatever happens to that hand, sure, whatever, but don't be your throwing hand. Maybe he was just seeing if the cortisone was working.
that absolutely sounds like something Max Scherzer would do to try to get the juices flowing through the body. He's still a kid. He's a 40-year-old. He's still a kid playing a kid's game, and you love that from Max Scherzer. I do hope he can get back onto the field soon. Speaking of injuries, Dalton Varsho, it was reported today from Hazel May that he won't begin throwing until the middle of April, which means he's likely out until at least May 1st, if not towards the end of the month, which is wild because we saw Dalton Varsho hit in spring training. So the fact he's still going to be out for another month since then seems a little wild to me, but shoulder injuries are tricky. And if we keep winning without him, so be it. Shout out to Chad Green, who after giving up two home runs in the opening series against Baltimore, pitched some clean innings in this national series. So shout out to where that is due. And I also wanted to touch on some things. Oh, Anthony Santander. Okay. He was 4-for-24 in the series before the two hit game today. He's been off to a kind of a bit of a slow start. Jesse, when do we get worried about the slow start from Anthony Santander?
Maybe I'll say middle May, early June, if it's like continuing to be like this, because then it's pretty much what we were fearing, like Kendrys Morales 2.0.
Right.
But I'm not worried yet, because so a lot of power hitters like them, once the weather gets warmer, that's when their bats starts heating up. So that's I'm giving that for the benefit of the doubt. And the same goes for Vladdy. That's what I'm thinking too, but there's been a couple of bad at bats for Vladdy. But I'm definitely not worried about Santander yet.
I don't think I am either. He's the type of hitter who can hit them in bunches when they do come. Doug, when should Nationals fans be worried about the hitting performance of Dylan Cruz or Luis Garcia or who's that big for Josh Bell or anyone else they have on this?
Anybody roster? On the roster is not CJ Abrams, you mean? Sure. Thanks, Jesse. No yeah, you know, certainly the worry for Dylan Cruz, I think is here. You know, they sat him game two of the series. Or maybe they sat him today. They sat him one of the days. But he has started out the season 0-for-15 with 10K.
That's Rafael Devers' numbers right there.
Yeah, not great. So he's not as disgruntled as Devers, I guess, hopefully. But, you know, you worry about Cruz because he was a guy who came up late last year. Everybody thought maybe that was a little early for him to came up, and he did okay. But you wonder how long the leash is. You know, he was a top couple, number two draft pick, right? So you would think the lease is pretty long, but you don't want to leave him out there if he's not doing well. With a guy like Luis Garcia, who just had a career year last year, I'm not as worried. I think he'll get it together. You know, we've only played three home games, got a big home, I think a 9-gamer homestand coming up starting later this week. So I'm not as worried about that. James Woods had a couple of hits, so all good there, but it is going to be an exercise in patience this year, because these young guys are going to struggle, and you just hope they all don't struggle at the same time. And, you know, it's going to be which one are you, you know, putting your finger on to, hey, you got to improve, or you're going to get sent down, because we're going to have three or four of those guys in the lineup at any given time.
Right. The Washington Nationals to me seem like they're still a year or two away, but you can start to see that young core kind of come together. I think about the Baltimore Orioles, the year they jumped from like 62 wins to like 77 wins before they really went their boom to their playoff success. And that kind of feels like where that is. But you need Dylan Cruz to come out of this and show signs and whatnot, or something to click. And you need Luis Garcia, and you need James Wood to show he can be that superstar, et cetera, which I'm sure you will. Before we get to some more questions for you, Doug, I just want to touch on some things that are happening down on the farm as the New Hampshire Fisher Cats got underway. Vancouver Canadians are getting underway soon. And same with the Dunedin Blue Jays in High A are all getting underway here soon. Jake Bloss is one of the big acquisitions we got in the Yusei Kikuchi trade. He made his first start for the Buffalo Bisons, and it did not go well. 4 innings pitched, 9 hits, 8 runs, only 3 of them earned, 2 walks, 1 strikeout, 71 pitches, only 2 whiffs on 32 swings, which that was a red flag for me from Jake Bloss. Jesse, we saw him struggle after coming to the Blue Jays last season and his first start here after a bit of an up-and-down spring. What do we make of this from Jake Bloss?
Again, it's the first start. Look what happened with Berrios. Do I want to see him dominant because of being that high prospect we have and one of the main pieces in that Yusei Kikuchi? Yes. Am I worried? No. It's AAA. A lot of pitcher stats in AAA are pretty much inflated in any league and in the minors. I just want to see him more like find his groove, get the whiffs, and just able to command his pitches. And like, but like, I'm definitely not worried, especially because depending on the weather too, if it's cold, it's a lot harder to grip the ball too. And especially in this part of where we are, is not the prettiest weather right now. So it's probably hard to grip the ball in the cold weather too while pitching.
And maybe that means he can't get the good spin on his curveball or something like that too. We know it was snowing at the Rogers Center today. It's snowing pretty hard where we live right now. Doug, no snow in Carolina where you are, eh?
No snow, but it is pouring rain right now. So, but the snow looked beautiful from outside Rogers Center today.
I assure you, it's not okay. And then, for a few more minor transaction notes, Zach Pop has been officially released after no one claimed him through waivers and DFA'd. He is gone. Treya Savage, the Blue Jays' first round pick in last year's draft, will start at High A Dunedin. Jesse, you and I were talking about how we think he should go to New Hampshire. However, Florida's a lot better place to pitch than Vancouver or New Hampshire right now. I think they probably want him in front of their pitching labs, so we will see. But I fully expect Treya Savage to go up and dominate that level. Arjun Namala, who is number two prospect, who made some heads in the spring breakout game this spring, will be starting at High A Vancouver and could likely make his way to Double A New Hampshire by the end of the season. All minor league rosters are out. I encourage every Blue Jays fan to go out there and check them out. Jesse, quick thought on Treya Savage before we fire Doug with some questions here.
Definitely makes sense why you have him pitching in Dunedin, keep him in the warm weather. Then I still feel like he can end the season in Buffalo just with what his pedigree and potential is as being a high prospect and what he's bringing to the table. And finally, but other than Treya Savage, I'm so glad to see Zach Pop finally get flushed off this organization.
When I saw that come across the headline today, I knew you would be ecstatic that we no longer have Zach Pop on this roster. I even typed Zach Pooh in my notes by mistake, and I didn't fix it in honor of you, Jesse. So there you go. Shout out to him. All right, Doug. Well, that's all the Blue Jays content we have here today. But now that we have a Nationals guest on the show, I figured there are definitely some Washington Nationals questions we got to ask you. And Jesse, I'll take the first one here. But you got to tell me about the 2019 World Series run that you guys went on. For a Blue Jays team that hasn't won a playoff game since 2016, that run you guys had in 2019 after having pretty damn good teams throughout the mid-2000s, what did that feel like? Describe that to me and to all the fans.
Man, it was just so unexpected. As you mentioned, you know, we were winning the division on kind of an even year, 2012, 2014, maybe 17 after that, but you know, losing in the first round of the playoffs every time. We lost to the Giants two of the years that they won the World Series on their even year BS. I think we lost to the Cardinals one year. So just could never get over the hump. And I think even in 2019, there were some signs that I was just like, okay, like we'll be good again, but I don't see anything special. But you know, as is often the case, right, a bullpen kind of comes together and you don't necessarily go into the season thinking, oh, this is the pen, but that makes the difference. And then the starting pitching that year, unreal. Strasburg and Scherzer, Corbin, you know, doing his thing. I mean, earning all the money his contract, because he didn't earn a dime of it after the World Series. Glad that deal is off the books,
you know.
Yeah. A young Juan Soto, and the big thing in 2019 that a lot of people forget is that was Harper's first year on the Phillies. You know, the questions about 2019 were, that was when we let the first guy go. So to make that run and to do it against the Astros, where you know you have most of baseball fans pulling for you, you know, given all the stuff about the Astros. It was just so awesome. And it passed the team passed the vibe check, right? Like, how many times have we seen a team just gel? You had the Red Sox with a bunch of idiots. You know, you had the later Red Sox, and they had like Johnny Gomes and stuff. You just get a couple guys that are those clubhouse guys, and they send you on an October run. And we had Gerardo Parra and Baby Shark, Howie Kendrick doing the gear shift celebration every time they hit a home run. So you could feel something special coming together with that. And then, it was euphoric. I remember breaking open a bottle of champagne in my house that I had for I don't even know what reason, but I scrambled to find the champagne. I was syncing up the radio call with the video feed because I wanted to hear the radio. We've got a great radio broadcast team, one of the best in the league. Wanted to hear them live when we got the last out. And then after that, we didn't get to celebrate a championship because of COVID. And then we turned into the Florida Marlins and sold off all our players. But, you know, it's one of those runs that I don't expect us to have again, but felt kind of like the Royals when they made their runs in the mid 2010s, just one of those small market teams, Cinderella run, right?
So all I'm hearing from this is that all the Blue Jays need to do is let Vladimir Guerrero Jr. walk in free agency, and then 2026, that's our year, right? No, I kid. But yeah, we will see. Jesse, fire away with a question you have for Doug here.
So I'm the prospect guy when it comes to the show. What is what prospect in the Nats organization are you most excited about? And that isn't named Dylan Cruz or James Wood, like someone like further down that not many people have eyes on.
Yeah. This is a great question. I could take this one of two ways. Let me give you two answers. The first is kind of a lame answer, and I shouldn't be as excited as I am because he's been hurt and he's not a prospect anymore. Is Cade Cavalli, one of our top pitching prospects. He had Tommy John, got hurt in spring training at 24. You know, I still think he's shown some flashes and he should be back up at some point this summer. But the real prospect I'd focus on, and I'm going to say his name wrong because he's not gotten high enough in the system yet that I've committed the correct pronunciation memories. Jarlin Susana, S-U-S-A-N-A. He was in the Soto and Bell deal to the Padres and was a lesser pitcher, but absolute flamethrower, bullpen guy. Control, you know, still a question mark, but really young, throws super hard. He was in camp for the first time, first spring training, this spring training, and he was one of the early, you know, early reassignments to minor league camp. But they sound really impressed with him, and looking at a team that's got a really terrible bullpen through six games, you know, I don't think this is the year for him. But at some point soon, let's, you know, it's a young live arm. Let's turn him loose and see what he can do in game action at the major league level.
Yeah, in high A ball, he's the Nationals' 13th ranked prospect. At least he was ranked that last year. Yeah, seems like a guy, a name I didn't know before this. So I really do like that. We're Canadian over here, and the Washington Nationals historically have actually had a handful of Canadian baseball players on their roster. But I want to talk about specifically one who we saw in game one of this series, and that's Mike Soroka, who I've loved. Mike Soroka, a good Canadian boy. I think he's from
Calgary.
He's from Calgary. Yeah, out in Calgary. I figured that. Love seeing that story. Love seeing him come back. Tell me what it's like to cheer on Mike Soroka, because we're rooting for him over here.
Yeah. You know, as I mentioned, grew up in Braves country, right? So a lot of friends that are Braves fans. You know, Soroka came up and was awesome with the Braves and had some of the worst injury luck. I think tore his Achilles twice. Tore the same Achilles or the other Achilles while rehabbing the first one. One of them just like walking off the mound. So, you know, really bad luck. You know, went to the Royals last year, showed some promise. I'll be honest, when they signed him, I was a little taken aback at $9 million for Mike Soroka, but, you know, if he stays healthy, he's going to eat innings. He seems like a all world guy. You know, I know, I'm going to forget one of his youth coaches in Canada. I remember seeing some stuff talking about how Soroka has been great, great to work with. And, you know, he's a guy that he's on a 1-year deal. So you have to think if he pitches really well, he could get traded to a contender. You know, I hate that being in the spot of when you're a team that's struggling, you're just hoping for good season for some of these guys so they can get traded. But he deserves to have some time with a contender. And I don't know what the future looks like after this year, but, you know, he's been around the block. He's dealt with some of the injury setbacks. And for a young staff, sure, he hadn't won a Cy Young or anything, but I think he can speak to handling adversity, and that'll help him mentor the young guys too.
I do love that. We are rooting for Mike Soroka. He did strike out a lot of guys for that White Sox team down the stretch last year, and I think that's what the excitement was for him there. Jesse, fire away with one more, and then I got one more, and then we'll let Doug wrap it up here.
Sounds good. In your time being a Nationals fan, what player hurt the most and leave your team, and what made it hurt so much for you?
Hurt the most when they left, or hurt the most because they didn't pan out? Because I can go that way too.
Yeah,
right, All right. Didn't pan out was an easy one. Danny Espinosa, switch hitting second baseman, shortstop, speed, power. I thought he was an easy 2020 guy. Had some chances, but
great mustache.
Got stash and great beard. I remember moving to DC and broke a 24-year-old Doug spending $325 on an authentic Danny Espinosa jersey. Nice. I was all in, man. And he fell apart from one side of the plate. And so much so they talk about him giving up switch hitting, which you can't just give up switch hitting if all your life you've been switch hitting. So he was one that didn't pan out that made me really sad, but player that left, man, it's tough. I think, we knew Harper was going to leave. Like, we're a small market team, right? We don't have the money for this. We knew Soto was going to leave. It's probably Scherzer. And I don't think it was a wrong decision or anything, but I really wanted him to finish his career as a Nat. I still think he's going into Cooperstown with a curly W on his cap. If he goes in with a team logo, I could see him going no team, but he's one where just, again, the way he competes, the intensity, but his love of the game too. And what a great dude he seems to be off the field. Just sucks to not have him finish his career with the Nats. And I don't, I know it made sense to move him to the Dodgers. I hated seeing him go there, but that was a tough one. Still haven't recovered from that. Still holding out hope. I really thought that we were going to sign him in the offseason because as things went on a little bit and there wasn't any noise, I thought we might get him to a 1-year deal. But maybe he pitches great for you guys on a 1-year deal and then next season we'll come back for a swan song.
Hey, if this season doesn't go what Max Scherzer wants it to, you can bet he's going to want revenge and he's going to go out on his terms, not throughout the injury. So we will see how that goes. My last question, and Doug, this might not be the best for you because your Nationals fandom didn't come till a little bit later in life. But as we know here as baseball fans in Canada, the Washington Nationals used to be the Montreal Expos. And when we were children, the Expos leaving to see a city lose their team has got to be one of the most devastating things. So for that reason, I just could never get on board with the Washington Nationals. I'm also still really mad at your team for in 2021, you guys were playing the Red Sox on the last day of the year and the Blue Jays, Jesse's already shaking his head because he already knows what's happening here. The Blue Jays had won 91 wins that game, but we needed Washington to beat the Red Sox on the last game of the year. So the Blue Jays had just smoked the Texas Rangers. We turn all eyes to that game. It was a close game late. And we're like, come on, Washington, just do this. And Boston's fighting for their playoffs lives. And the whole Nationals feed is just Ryan Zimmerman's last game as a National. And this is great. And who cares what happens in this game? And so I am forever mad at your franchise because of that. So I guess I kind of took that two separate ways. But if you want to touch on the Expos and their history with your team, and then why did they not care for us, I suppose, in that 2021 game and help us get into the playoffs?
I think, why are we putting our hopes on an interleague game late in the season? You know, that's the downside of having, so much interleague play scattered throughout the year, right? It wasn't even the same league. It's not like there was rooting interest of like, oh, we can, help the Padres and hurt the Phillies or something, right? Like, it's right. So I apologize on behalf of my Nats for that. We stunk at the end of 21. So, what are you going to do? But the Expos thing's interesting. And I mean, being a part of so many home games when I lived up there, the relationship is odd, right? Because it kind of feels like to make an American example, a Titans, an Oilers situation in the NFL, where the records and the logos and everything moved with the team, but the Nats fans really just want to embrace, DC. And I think most would tell you casual, certainly, oh, the team started in the mid 2000s and they wouldn't think of the Expos history. We do have Expos players, Gary Carter, Vlad up, recognized in the stadium, but there's no connection to it. I've bought Expos gear. I've worn it to games, before. It does feel a little weird. I read the book Up, Up and Away about the Expos. Incredible read by a now problematic author, must say, but fantastic book. I encourage any baseball fan to read it. So, you know, again, I grew up in Braves country, right? So like, I remember the Expos were in the NL East, you know, even back then. So I remember watching a lot of Expos baseball, you know, when they'd be playing Atlanta, and it's such a cool franchise. And while I'm sure it's fun to have one team that can carry the banner for all of Canada, I miss the rivalry. I know the, you know, I guess it was pre-COVID, the couple years that you guys played exhibition games in Montreal, in Olympic Stadium, how awesome that was to see that place packed, even though it's probably a bit of a dump, but it's a charming dump at this point.
It's like the Trop, you know, before the roof blew off of it.
There's something endearing about it. So
before Kurt's triple.
That's right.
It was cool. And now with the, you know, with the Rays news kind of situation falling apart, you wonder, is there hope for Montreal? I don't think they're at the forefront of the expansion discussion. I think there are a couple other cities that are ahead of them. But man, I'd love to see baseball back in Montreal one day. And if they do, I hope that the Nats would give the keys back to all those records, all the franchise history. It belongs in Montreal. Montreal is one of the coolest places, just cities, period, take baseball out of it, that I've ever been. I love Montreal, and they need baseball back. And you guys need to be able to have a north of the border rivalry again.
That would be great. I would love nothing more to do just that. Doug, thank you for joining us and giving us your Nationals takes on this episode. Tell the people listening and watching how they can get a hold of you or follow your work or whatever it is you want to shout out here.
Yeah, sure. Doug Irwin _ on Twitter. Doug Irwin on Instagram. I work for a professional soccer team, so I tweet a lot about third division American soccer. And I whine about DC sports and then the Denver Broncos on the football side. So, thanks again for having me on, guys. Looking forward to doing this again in 2026. And maybe we can meet up in Navy Yard in DC. It's a wonderful middle of the road baseball stadium. So.
8-hour drive for us from here. That's where we bad. Are in Canada same, to get to Washington. From, we can do that in a day. So that's not too bad. Well, that'll do it for episode here today. We will be back to recap the weekend series against the New York Mets. And I'm hoping the Toronto Blue Jays can keep their hot streak going here. For Jesse Treso and for Doug Irwin, I am Jesse Burrell. Thank you all for listening. And in the meantime, let's go Blue Jays.
Thanks, guys.